title of this class is The Artist's Way, A Spiritual Path to Higher Creativity. And as I started to say, it's really not so much a class as just sharing this book with you, because it's been so important to me over about the past year and a half that I felt like I really wanted to share it with the folks here at Holden. This is in the Holden bookstore, by the way. It's by Julia Cameron. I've been a working artist for about 27 years, and my work has been as a musician, primarily, as a performer, as a songwriter, and then as a teacher, although the teaching has begun to take more of my time than it used to. And when I discovered this book, I chose to put together a class, which I'll tell you more about later, and did a 13-week session on The Artist's Way, and supplemented it with other readings, and there are other resources we'll talk about a little bit later, too. But first of all, maybe as much as I can put this together, I think the reason that it so appealed to me is just thinking back on my own journey. I've always seen the art that I do as a spiritual path. I entered it very intentionally, feeling that I wanted my work to be a tool for social change, and then later more as a healing tool, as ways to touch people's hearts and minds in ways that nothing else seemed to. And I think art has that power. I strongly believe in the transformative power of art. But I know that time and time again I would hit onto my own walls, onto my own blocks, into dead ends, into all the different ways that we can get sidetracked. And Julia Cameron is another one too, who clearly has met her monsters and found ways to overcome them. And she is a writer, a screenplay writer, with a fair amount of success behind her and credits behind her. And she began teaching creativity, and after a decade and more of teaching, she developed this book. She just was really encouraged to put this together and so developed the book. So The Artist's Way is primarily, it's a spiritual path, and I think what I want to say about that is it's a path that's initiated and practiced through creativity. It's a process of engaging the creative spirit, discovering and recovering creative powers, and it's very much centered and based on the idea that there is a creative spirit behind it all. And certainly I know in my own art, I usually felt it wasn't so much that I wrote the songs as I wrote them down. I think there's some famous songwriter that said that, and it immediately resonated with me, because I've felt that for a long time, that something would take over, despite all my blocks, despite all the ways that I managed to keep that from happening. There would be a flow, and I was strongly aware that it was connected to something beyond myself. And that is definitely a premise in Julia's book. There are many other ways or methods of finding your creativity, but I think hers, and more are coming out and seeing the connection between creativity and spirituality. And certainly that is core and central to her program, and that's why I think I got so excited about it. So God is the great creator, and yet you can use whatever works for you. It may be the inner light. It may be, I mean, she is certainly not touting any particular path. She is saying that it's the creative spirit, however you choose to name that. So it's very inclusive in her writing. It's a tribal process, the artist's way, in that it works best in clusters of artists and aspiring artists. And by the cluster, I mean people who are getting together and supporting each other. They are believing mirrors. And you've probably all had some experience with someone and checking out an idea and having someone who's not just going to stand there and rip it apart, but who are really there reflecting and giving you the very best kind of feedback. And artists do that. I think contrary to many myths that people have about artists, artists work best when they are being stimulated by other believing mirrors, by other guides and companions on the road, by people who are there to help midwife, who help give birth to the creative process for each other. There are basic tools, which we'll talk about in a minute in this process. And I truly believe that if you are resolute about using the basic tools, it will inevitably, and this is again why I call it a spiritual path, it will inevitably lead to the unexpected. There will be unexpected spiritual power, connection with the source of inner wisdom, connection with yourself and with your own resources. And what are some of the creative blocks? I think this is something that'll be interesting to put out to you too. Most of us are in some way creatively blocked. It's not like, okay, we start here and we get here and we're done. This is a constant process. I think the book gives you a real guide and a real discipline for beginning, but many people I know have been through twice and it's not nearly enough. You just keep going through because there's always so much new to learn. But one way you may know if you are creatively blocked is if you experience a lot of jealousy around other people who are doing artwork, and maybe you're finding really more than necessarily critical of what they're doing. This is probably because they're doing something you would like to be doing. When I first read that, I realized there was someone in town who is making a living doing what I do, doing it very well. And for a long time, I just felt so jealous that I could do what he's doing. And I realized, and I wasn't critical of him. He was very supportive. He's great at what he does. But it was a different kind of jealousy. It was more like envy. It's more like knowing he's doing something that I need to be more aware, to tune into, because he's somewhere I want to be. And I've been letting that seep into my consciousness and try to learn more from that. Welcome. By the way, there's a reading list here in case, and if you didn't catch that. Okay. So if you experience jealousy, it well may be that you're creatively blocked. It also is true that along with that, you may find that there are people around you who may be jealous of you, and people who may be some of your, you know, in your first sort of budding efforts when you want to share something you've created with someone, and they are really extremely critical. And they may be good friends, and they may be family members, and it could be that they themselves are creatively blocked, and because they're known as shadow artists, and sometimes it's these very people who are the most severe, who become critics, you know, start making a living at it, because they themselves have not followed through, and they feel blocked and frustrated, and they wouldn't consciously know that, but then they are particularly severe in their criticism of you. So keep that in mind at a point when you're beginning to put your work out. You know, it's what a critic says may well come from their own stuff rather than what they're seeing. They're also, we're in a fairly toxic culture towards art and artists. And I want you to think just for a minute about maybe some examples that you have of messages you've received that may be blocking your creativity. Messages, for example, I'm really too old to start now. Yeah. That's one. Can you think back to any messages you may have heard that keeps you stuck?
It's an unstable lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Other messages?
It's a waste of your time.
Waste of time. Ooh, that's strong. How many of you were raised with the grasshopper and the ant story? It makes us artists very nervous. We never liked that story. Yeah, okay. Other messages?
I think the implication that you had to be a special kind of person,
yes,
to be creative, that there's somehow creative people and not creative people.
Mm-hmm. They were sort of born creative.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. And if you're not, well, you just never will be.
Right.
Yeah.
And they probably sprang forth fully formed like that.
Right.
They didn't have to go through a process.
Right.
What you're sometimes I hear what you're making that has such limited usefulness.
Okay. Yeah, what's the point anyway?
What's the point?
Okay. Others? to me.
You can't support yourself that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's almost like it's something that you do at a different stage in your life. Like maybe when you're younger, it's okay to do, mm-hmm. but then you should grow up and do something else.
Wait 2 years old as Grandma Moses.
Along with that is that loss, really a great loss of dreams and visions, but those really, you know, grow up, those really aren't important, you know. It's true. It's pretty strong. It's pretty strong. And then there's all those kinds of messages. And then there's just sort of the myth that we have about artists. Who are artists? When you think back of well-known writers or musicians or artists, what are some things that come to mind? Other than fabulously talented, but what other images come?
They might be emotionally unstable, very difficult to live with.
Okay, what else? Crazy, suicidal.
They lead tragic lives.
Tragic lives, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Doomed and unhappy. Drugs, alcohol, right? Promiscuous, probably. Does that resonate mm-hmm. with you? So who'd want to do that? Who'd want to be associated with one of them? Whew. Well, don't you think, so it's not just, there are individuals in your life who gave you the kind of messages, the kind of personal messages, like the teacher who said, looked at your creation, your drawing, and said, well, let me just fix it up a little bit before the parents open house, you know. That's one. How about the music teacher who said, just mouth the words, please. Any of you had any experiences like that?
Hmm? I had a schoolmate, first grade through 12th grade, that I hooked up with later, and my 50th birthday party was with him. And he was telling me what he remembered about our fifth grade teacher was one day in English he had to write a composition and he had turned over his paper and drawn a picture. Mm-hmm. And the teacher said as she was handing these papers back, oh, and this is how some people waste their time. And Tom was a cartoonist artist his whole adult life. He was a cartoon weatherman on the weather station in Seattle for a long time. But he said, I never forgot that. He said, I'd like to take her nose and rub it in some of my paints yet.
And it's sort of amazing that he survived it. Because the stories that I hear again and again in my classes that I teach, are that was the end of it. These are the people who come to the class and say, my last creative act was 20 years ago, you know, in fourth grade, and then this happened. Or it may have been college. It may have been a college professor who just completely devastated some young writer's work, you know, in the name of ego, in the name of, you know.
Tom, I think he said I asked him how he got interested in it in the first place, and he says, when I was 3 years old, I drew a picture and my grandpa and grandma thought it was the greatest thing.
It's great.
And yeah. I think of all the notes, he'd get bored in class, he'd send us cartoon drawing, notes weren't written, they were cartoons all the time. And I think of, we dropped them in the wastebasket on our way out. I now have a painting in my home, it's probably worth $1,000. And I think of all the things we threw away in high school.
Can you think of some of your personal censors? I mean, that's certainly, those kind of teachers are one. Does it come closer to home? Or, I mean, are there other times you can think of when you remember being blocked?
Yeah. I had, I was trying to learn some card weaving, and I asked about Icelandic carving, and the teacher, maybe my memory is faulty, but I think she said, well, that's pretty difficult. I don't think you could do that, you know. Mm. And that just spurred me on to learn more about it. I probably never would have continued if she hadn't said that rather negative.
Yeah.
I also think of the most positive teacher I've ever had, and that was in improv, and kind of, I guess that's artistic improv.
Sure.
And she would not use the word but because, since she thought it was so negative. You know, that was okay, but she dropped it. She said, that was okay, and why don't you add this? But her idea was that but was too negative and was a put down to that person. And so she changed it to and.
What a simple thing, and how powerful.
To me it was, but very, I think, very important. Someone learning needs confidence and assurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we all have both the sensors and the artistic heroes, to the people who helped us go ahead to help us
being
break
a
through.
Teacher, I had a little kip in class, sixth grade, and it was just, he was from a whole generation of men who were big, robust athletes.
Mm-hmm.
He was petite, creative kip. And I really took it, I mean, the whole class gained on what kip had to offer us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was just really an interesting year to let that boy grow in his artistic abilities, even with the family. I don't know what he became as an adult, but I think of how the blossoming he did that year. And his mother even came in several times and talked about how happy he was in school that year.
Yeah.
And yet, she said the stigma of him being petite like I am instead of breakfast like mm-hmm. all the males
mm-hmm.
was really going to be hard on him as he got into junior high and high school.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw it coming.
I think that's one that a stigma that males particularly have in this culture is that it's somehow not manly to be artistic. And how many budding young creatives just got stopped there on that issue alone.
Mm-hmm.
There's another thing too, and that's the issue of shame in this culture. It's the and that touches on that. It's the shame about being an artist, and the shame that you feel in trying to create something, especially if it isn't kind of good enough. That and again, the shaming that teachers do, the kind of put downs and those messages that just stick with us all of our life and convince us that you just really can't do that now. And you know, the fact that the culture does not support art as it should, I think has a lot to do with the fact that art brings things to light. Art, as Julia has an expression, it exposes a society to itself. And certainly in my art, I'm quite intentional about that. I think it's, who's the quote? Art should be a hammer to help shape the society. Oh, I'm going to forget it. Oh, I forgot it. It'll come back. But that's the idea. Censors, the people who are trying to preserve the status quo, don't like the fact that art is a very potent symbol of change. And of, I mean, it used to be, I know in my field as musicians, it used to be that there would be, the minstrel's duty was to, he would be hired by the people to sit in the king's court and poke fun at the king and just constantly kind of ridicule him and just kind of keep him honest. And we still have political cartoonists or people who still feel, you know, use that role. I know that one of the real traumas in the city of Bellingham came when there was an incredibly innocuous display. And it was called, Friends and Neighbors. And it grew out of the Oregon Citizens Alliance attempt to put petitions on. It was anti-gay petitions. And in this, in City Hall, they put a display that was, I mean, there was nothing erotic, there was nothing sexual about it. All it did was highlight and tell the stories of gay and lesbian men and women just in their workplace. You know, there would be a police officer and there would be, you know, the different people just in their working environment. And it did it ever hit the fan when that opened in the lobby? And the newspaper fueled it. They made sure that it did. And it became this huge controversy. And most of the most incredible letters that were in the paper against this innocuous display, by the very fact that it was there, and how dare you put something like that in City Hall. And those of us who had seen it, because I think a good share of the people who did that had never seen it, but they only heard it was about gays and lesbians, so it went to the heart of their fear, and they just attacked it. And people who saw it said, I don't get it. There is nothing offensive in this display. This is incredible. So that is a way. But you see, there would be so many in our culture who would say, okay, no art in City Hall. And they actually have that proposed right now. No art in City Hall. Just, you know, if there's anything that might be controversial, ban it. You know, that scares the heck out of me, you know, that could even be a possibility. Well, back to Julia's book. So easy to digress. But I want to get to the basic tools. In the very opening chapters, you'll find that she describes the basic tools, which are ways to help break through our creative blocks. The first tool to help unblock, kind of help the spirit flow freely, are the morning pages. Oh, one question here, one quote I want to read you, a little insert here. This is Brenda Uhland, and I forgot, she's written a very fine book, and I forgot what it was, but okay. Why should we use our creative power? Because there is nothing that makes people so generous, joyful, lively, bold, and compassionate, so indifferent to fighting and the accumulation of objects and money. That was very telling. Okay, the morning pages. This is the primary tool of creative recovery. It's a way of getting beyond the censor. All those little messages that when you start writing say, oh, that's such dribble. You know, why are you doing this? This is 3 pages of uncensored, just stream of consciousness kind of writing. You try and keep your hand moving. You don't lift your hand off the page if you can help it. You just keep writing for 3 pages. And what will come out is a whole lot of dribble. And that's the idea. This is nothing to preserve. This is something you'll hold on to, because now and then there's something you might want to go back to. But mostly, you won't go back to it. Nobody else sees this. It's a brain drain. It's a process of unloading all of that stuff that gets collected in your head, and you need to get it away, get it out of the way before you can start really getting in touch with your creativity. And you do this religiously every morning. I use this for my, it's just a little spiral notebook, so I cheat a little. It's smaller than some people do, but I do pretty well to fill these. And I keep it handy, close to my bed. I actually carry this around with me a lot. And 3 pages, fill it up and forget it. Now, another thing I do is I will keep my daily to-do list right by it, because I want to refer to that. So, and that's the kind of stuff that will pop to the top of my head. You know, it'll be a whole lot of just gritching about things in general, 2/3 of it. And given what when I talk to other people, it's a whole lot of that. And then along with it, I'll put my to-do list, all the stuff that rises to your consciousness that you want to remember, and that'll be there too on a separate piece of paper. But I just keep writing. And usually, hopefully, by about the third page, I might actually start getting out of that mode of just using it as a dumping ground, and might actually start getting creative. Or I might not. You know, it may strictly be a dumping ground.
Is that to sort of get you primed, to get you started?
To get you somewhat clear. And the more you write, and the more you're able, I mean, it's like a meditation. And the more you write and just do this kind of automatic, then you're going to start getting out of your logic brain and start beginning to get more into the artist brain. Mm. And then you'll have some blurts, you know, about, you are so ridiculous. This is such dribble. You know, these kind of blurts, which is the inner critic coming out. Get it out. Just put it down. You know, look at it and laugh at it. I mean, it's there. Let it go. Some people make little images of their internal critic, or maybe it's a parent and they put their picture right there in some real unflattering pictures and they throw darts at it or something. I mean, just let it out. Know where those voices are coming from. You know, they're not coming from the spirit. Those are the voices that are getting in your way, and they're going to blurt out on the page. So get them out. So that's step one of the basic tools. Then let's see if there's anything else I want to say about that. Here. Okay, non-negotiable. Yeah, I said that. Okay, you're going to at times, you'll reach a point fairly soon where you will absolutely hate them and you will resent them and you will feel like this is total trash and I don't know why I'm doing this, but then write that, this is total trash, I don't know why I'm doing this. Just the point is keep doing it. Okay, because then as you keep getting the drivel out, it's the place where you also send notice of some of your dreams and some of your dissatisfactions. And some of your hopes, they're all there. Page 20, I want to read a little bit here. It's a little... When people ask why do we... This is Julia. When people ask why do we write morning pages, I joke to get to the other side. They think I'm kidding, but I'm not. Morning pages do get us to the other side of our fear, of our negativity, of our moods. Above all, they get us beyond our censor. Beyond the reach of the censor's babble, we find our own quiet center, the place where we hear the still small voice that is at once our creator's and our own. Okay, second part. Was there two? Only two basic tools. The second part is the artist state. And whereas one is dumping and getting it all out, then you also need a place to fill the well. You need a place to gain inspiration. It's an opening of yourself to insight and guidance. This is 2 hours weekly. It's a block of time that you pre-plan, at least 2 hours weekly. It might be more. Holden Village is actually definitely my artist date, and it's a week. You pre-plan it, you set this aside, and you guard this time, because there will be many external sources that will say, what are you doing spending 2 hours on this, you know, whatever it is that you've planned to do? A lot of family pressure, but mostly the pressure is going to come from inside. You know, my 2 hours are not as important as everybody else's 2 hours. You know, why am I spending this on myself, doing this thing? But you have to spend quality time with that inner child, with that part of you that needs to be nurtured, and you've got to defend it from all the pressures that would get you to let it go. You need to go alone. Not with a family member, not with your husband. Going to a movie with your husband really doesn't count. Going to a movie alone might. There are a lot of different things that people do. It's kind of fun to hear the stories, because in class then we'll go around and we'll share what the artist date was for the week. And it's lively. It's but the main thing is, whatever you choose to do should be fun. And you need to pay attention. You need to pay deep attention to the sight, the sound, the smell, the taste, the touch. To, you know, really let your senses open to whatever it is that you're doing. Now, some examples of artistry. It might be cooking, you know, slicing vegetables. I mean, we're talking about some of it could be very, very simple. It could be doing needlework, just letting the mind go, you know, just letting it relax and doing some handwork. It could be, one woman talked about, you know, I mean, feeding the kid inside. She went to the store and got some bubbles, and she blew bubbles. It might be going to a fabric store and just feeling, you know, just really looking at the variety and the riches and the texture of the fabrics. It might be going to a lecture, going to a museum, a bookstore. I mean, those, I just really get nourished just looking at a bookstore, spending time there. That's a good one for me. An art gallery, a museum, but it doesn't have to be that fancy. We're talking, Jack, about something called the art estate. This is the second basic tool. It's 2 hours that you spend with yourself filling the well, doing something that will really feed you. And I'll tell you, you will come up with so many excuses not to do that. It'll amaze you. It will astound you how many ways you can think of to get out of it. Gardening. Yeah, for me, that fills the well. I don't have any particular talent or skill at it, but I love it. I just love to get my hands in the dirt and go buy a couple flowers and stick them in the ground. I mean, it's a beginning. I do. I really enjoy it. Anybody think of other examples you could think of that would feed your soul?
Walking.
Yeah. Yeah. Massage, if one has the luxury of that. I do that.
Meditation is another one I do a lot of. Yeah.
Well, good ideas. And you can make your own list so that, but do be intentional about it. I think what a lot of people did in the class, occasion me too, we'd get to class and part of what we would do would be to check in. What was your art estate this week? And we'd think back to the week and think, well, let's see, what did I do that was particularly nourishing, or that might fit that category? You need to pre-plan it. Be really intentional about it so that you know you are really honoring that artist child or that creative self, that you're doing it very intentionally. Now, just a word about what to expect if you decide to dive into this book and do the course, is that it will take you probably at least an hour a day. I mean, it's a bit of a commitment to recover the creative soul within you, but well worth the effort. It will probably take you an hour or more a day. Each chapter gives you tasks to do, and you will probably do about half of them. You probably won't get them all, and most people don't, and that's okay. And that's why it might take two or three times. And you might want to dive into the task that you particularly don't want to do, because that may be where the real learning is. You can expect, in terms of emotionally, and I surely saw my students go through this, the first week's defiance and giddiness, and then about midway through, a lot of anger seems to come up for people. And there's a lot to be learned from the anger that comes up. There might be grief for all the years that you lost. It'd be issues of resistance and then hope. All of that. Elation, defensive skepticism. And certainly we have usually one or two who drop out in the course, and that's just kind of part of it. Some people just really aren't ready. And it's sometimes it's time issues, but sometimes it's just like, I don't want to touch that one right now, thank you. This may disrupt my life, and it may. It's true. We could do some creative U-turns, which are that you just think you're kind of really going, and then you really backtrack. And it happens in all kinds of sneaky ways. You have a piece almost finished, and then, gosh, you just can't seem to find the time to finish it off. Or you've got a book that's ready to send to the publisher, but you just can't quite get to it. It's all those things that you just kind of get here and and it's one other good reason why in a group that's people can spot that for you. And you said you were going to do what? And you did you follow through with it? This is the way, again, a support group can be very useful. I want to say one word about synchronicity. Synchronicity is a word that comes in. There's so many concepts. It's so thick. And putting a 13-week course in 1 hour is not... I can't do it. I have a little trouble doing that. But... just one word to pick out. She mentioned synchronicity, which is the sort of fortuitous intermeshing of events. And another way of calling that is answered prayers. And that can be pretty scary. I know in my own experience, I can usually see all the synchronicity by looking back. Often I can't recognize it at the time, but I'm living much of my life as I would have imagined it 20 years ago. And the steps getting here were just crazy, you know, the way things would seem to come together and the way doors would open and other doors would close. And to somehow still be on this path is rather amazing to me. And I couldn't have done that alone. And there were just endless little circumstances that happened and doors that I stepped through that were fearful sometimes, but were exactly the thing I needed to do to go to the heart of it. Dropping out of teaching and choosing to sing songs in folk clubs was a pretty crazy thing to do. And I think just about every time I launch into a new project, I think, this is insane. Where are you going to get the money? Where are you going to get the time? How in the world is this going to happen? And then things just start happening, you know? A person will come, another person, and pretty soon it's happening. But it doesn't happen by my being still. It's like one of my favorite sayings is, God can't drive a parked car. You have to be in gear. You have to be on the road, even if it's, you know, not quite right. And then you'll see how the synchronicity begins to happen. Julia Cameron said, it's my experience that we're much more afraid that there might be a God than we are that there might not be, because possibility is more frightening than impossibility, and freedom is more terrifying than prison. I think that's very true. Goethe said, whatever you think you can do or believe you can do, begin it. Action has magic, grace, and power in it. I want to talk just a little bit about the groups that I do and how I organize them, because one thing Julia does is she says, go out and start a group. You know, you don't have to go write to her and get permission. You don't have to give her royalties. You just do it. And so I kind of took on that challenge and just put up a poster, see who's going to come. And I charge money for my courses because it's part of how I make my living. But many artists in town just get together on their own and do it. I think mine's a little more intentional. We meet in a gallery. Let me just sort of describe how I arrange it. I have 10 people, no more than 10. And we meet for 13 weeks each week, about 2 hours each week. So actually, I mean, it's even a little more time consuming than if you just did this course on your own. But there's a lot of benefits from it, too. I supplement it usually with readings from books like these, from various resources. I assign every week a theme. It might be, like the very first one I did was strawberries. And I said, whatever art medium you choose to work in, come back to something about strawberries. And it was great. I couldn't believe it. The first week, I thought, this is really going to work. I didn't know if it would work or not. People came back. One person came back with a little female strawberry necklace. Another person had written a song about strawberries. Another person had written a memory that I still can bring back of being in college and this guy and raising tenderly these strawberries in a window box from her grandmother's garden, and then some guy coming in and just eating them all. You know, she went, oh, by the way, I helped myself to your strawberry. You know, just the devastation of that. I mean, it was beautiful, tender piece in the way she wrote it. Someone else just drew a beautiful picture of a strawberry. So people used all different medium and came with many different gifts, and also all levels of expertise, you know, which was all welcome. We had, you know, many ages, many styles, and some people, as I said, who thought their last creative act had been 20 years before, and other people who were working artists. And it was all welcome. So we establish a zone of safety. We have certain ground rules about being supportive. We're not there to tear each other's work apart. We're not there to really be critics. We're there to support the process, and the product is really not that important. So it's different in that some groups of artists who may get together to really, you know, challenge each other in terms of the work, but for us, we're challenging each other on the process just to be doing it. We check in and talk about whether the morning pages have been done, the artist way and morning pages. It's, for me, it was one of the more valuable things, because the very first week I hadn't done my morning pages every day by any means. I'd only gotten to them about three times. And I sat there, and everybody else said, "What? Yeah, every day, just like you said." And it got to me, and okay, I won't skip them anymore, really. And there's an accountability factor that's very useful. And also it's the accountability to show up with your work of art. And it doesn't matter if it's finished or not. What we kind of want to encourage people to do is at least get started. Maybe if it's been a really intense week, just tell us kind of, did you have some ideas? What was it? But there's a kind of a group pressure that says, hey, you know, we're doing this together here. Let's try and be accountable. There is confidentiality, because sometimes issues come up for people. When you're dealing with art, you're dealing with such a powerful and emotional medium that sometimes things come up, and there's a little space for that. And so confidentiality is important. The groups bond. All the groups we've had have bonded very tightly. It's been pretty amazing to watch. They have all three groups that I facilitated chose to continue meeting in some form, and then sometimes they dropped back, sometimes they didn't, and some continued as a monthly, just kind of artist date they'd get together, and another group continued with the intentionality of being a spirituality group. Because one other part I bring in the groups that I do is the spirituality, because it's so much a part of it. We close with a say no more than a little prayer and a song, but we do something to kind of tap into that source. And people have been, sometimes people were surprised, but people have always been quite respectful. Because if I tell everyone to please check out the book first before they come to class, so that they know what the basis of it is, and that this won't be particularly offensive to them. And I also make it clear that there's no, we're not coming from any particular perspective, and that no one should feel particularly uncomfortable. So that has seemed to have worked very well. Sometimes it's a little more ritual, something that I might have prepared. And that's kind of it. I'm trying to think if I've left out anything. We have conversation about something in the chapter. That's part of it, too. Sharing the artwork, which is people's, some of their favorite part, is just having people talk about the creative process around their, how they've created this work, or how the idea came. That's been really fun. Sometimes we'll do a brief art exercise in the class. It might be a little writing meditation, a drawing, a dance, working with clay, something like that to get people working. Close with a sacred circle. That's pretty much it. Well, we've got some time here just to talk about it. Just to answer any questions or talk about it some more. I really want you to have a chance to look over some of these books. In fact, maybe I'll start out with that little book review. Singing at the Top of Our Lungs, particularly Women, Love, and Creativity. And just in the inner flat, I'm going to read this one. For most women, love and creative energy feel like the split ends of our psychic and emotional lives. When we focus on a relationship, we feel uncomfortable about not accomplishing more. When we focus on our more self-expressive impulses, we feel guilty that we're not relating more. We end up seeing ourselves as divided, frantically trying to balance obligation with need, responsibility with satisfaction. I don't know about you, but I've been there. Probably most women I know have. I'm sure some men too, but I think it's particularly been a women's issue. And this is a book that tells stories about how women can and do resolve the split. So, really fine book. Freeing the Creative Spirit, this is in the Holden bookstore too. I love this book. I think it's a perfect companion piece to The Artist's Way. Only you could get overwhelmed if you tried to do both of them at the same time, but in the same spirit.
just wonderful exercises, well written, just a really fine book. So look this, if you get a chance, check this out at the bookstore. These others aren't in the bookstore. I think the only two that are here, Creating the Creative Spirit and The Artist's Way. But a couple more, No More Secondhand Art. I haven't read this, I've just started it. But had to do with art techniques, but also art therapy. And again, a very fine approach. He's an art educator. And this one, Art is a Way of Knowing. Guide to Self-Knowledge and Spiritual Fulfillment Through Creativity. Some really good basic resources about, you know, here some tools. If you're painting, here's some, you know, brushes, and here's how to create a space for yourself, and some really good ideas here too. Yeah, and reading list I told you about. Okay, well, let's just talk for a few minutes. Are you all going to run out and buy the book?
I'd be interested in what kind of change or what kind of experience people have kind of at the end of the course. What do they kind of take away?
It's been very interesting. Some people, it affects their relationship deeply. I can't say a lot more about that, but just to know that the relationships, if they weren't going to be, you know, come more whole, they were going to end. But somehow that came up as part of the creativity. When you start tapping into creativity, who knows where it's going to lead. One woman started her own business. Another woman, there were a number of women who got very excited and started moving more into, you know, they'd just sort of been dabblers and started being much more intentional about their art. And started actually moving it towards a business. Some of them, it was the longing for the creativity or the spirituality that they experienced in the group. Two of the three groups were women's groups. I mean, the first one just turned out that way. The second one was intentional. Then the third group was mixed. And the women had a real longing for the kind of spirituality they were experiencing, and so started groups or joined groups or sought out groups. So those were just some of the things. As I said, it was surprising the different directions it would go. I'm trying to remember that. Oh, one woman got into a Shackley business and felt it was directly out of this class. You know. So,
could you talk more about impacting relationships? I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a side, but it sounds like when people start to get in touch with their creative side, they start to kind of reevaluate things around.
I think so. I think when you start, as I said, when you start breaking ground there and breaking through the numbness, because when we're not in touch with our creativity, I think we do get fairly numb. And when you start breaking through that, who knows where it might lead. But you're going to start thinking in new ways. And hopefully, if it's in a relationship that's really unsatisfactory or maybe even feels abusive, when you start getting in touch with your own power and your own strength and your own self-esteem, because I think art will help you get in touch with all of that, and if you start realizing that maybe the censor in your life is your spouse, or maybe the crazy maker, that's a whole other category, that's the person when you're just starting to, you know, feel like this is going well, and this person is the crazy maker, is the one who maybe just before you're going on stage as a performer, I think, that will come up and say, "Honey, did you pay the light bill?" You know, I mean, the one who will just zap you, you know, or "That was pretty good, but," you know, or who will just always keep you just off balance, or you're just ready to go to class and it's like, I've really got to go for this, you know, I mean, it's just all the kind of ways that you get disrupted. And that person may be your spouse, and that may, the crazy maker in your life may be a best friend, it may be your spouse, maybe the person you have to let go.
I did that for 27 years.
Sometimes it takes a long time to recognize the crazy maker or the, right. or the censor. Yeah.
We'd always move. Mm-hmm. Something crazy to come up.
Yeah. I think they're versions of the same animal.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Is any more about that, Jack?
No, I just thought it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Any?
I think the thing that has, you know, I got turned on to poetry here at Holden. Mm-hmm. I can't remember, I guess it was 2 years ago, they had kind of a writer's group, and you'd sit down and you'd pull certain topics out of the hat and write on them for 5 minutes, and then people would share, and then you pull another topic out and write. And then last year I started writing more, and then there was one book that I read that basically says, you know, write when you can't help but write. And so I started writing kind of following those kind of urges.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit scary because if you do that, then you set aside everything else. And I found that, you know, kind of took a lot of trust, because you start out with kind of a structured day, or, you know, I'm going to do this, this, and this, and all of a sudden you find yourself writing for 2 hours or 3 hours. And like I said, that I found myself, you know, scared may be too strong of a word, but certainly had some anxiety about
mm-hmm.
it, because
mm-hmm.
it was leaving other things unfinished,
yeah.
not knowing what the outcome was going to be.
I think I made that comment in your class earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Art is messy, and art is unpredictable, and that creativity is all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And it is hard to predict outcomes. It's, mm-hmm. it's difficult to know where it's going to lead you.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're not, part of the process is that we're not so concerned about where it's going to lead you.
Mm-hmm.
You become more concerned with what's the journey, what's the mm-hmm. process. Other thoughts, comments?
I've had an experience in this started last May, I guess. I had a call from a video friend I had. He said, my brother's in town, needs a photographer. I thought of you. And so I said, when would you have time to see him? And I said, well, I'm just picking up my camera tonight, so how about 8:30 Saturday morning, so I'd at least get a roll produced before we're shooting someone else's work. And I didn't think to ask, does he paint on stretch canvas, does he paint, you know, in a more textured way or what. So I had no idea what was coming Saturday morning, 8:30. And the doorbell rang, and here was a 6'4" guy with a roll under his arm. He painted on Helen with not oil, but with, what's the other part?
Acrylic.
And so he unrolled this black velvet with all these paintings on it. I think we shot 36 pictures that morning. And I was to choose one of them to keep as my own. And powerful pictures. They were moving and powerful and colorful. And we got into discussing them, and one of them, I said, it was so powerful, I just looked at him, can you tell me what was going on inside you at this? He says, I have to know you better before I can. But it was, he had come up from Texas and Florida, where he usually is, and it was just really a neat experience to do that photography and then go out and, he went to Saturday Market in Portland, which is where all of our hobbyists and artists can display their wares and sell them, and the people really come. And it was interesting to watch him. His brother's a writer, but a very practical writer for a living, and almost has books published but never submits them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's now his brother had lunch with me not long ago, and he'd always go to Florida for the winter, Key West. His daughter had a boat he'd live on, and she was glad to have him there, so it worked out very well between them. And but his mother contacted
cancer and is probably in her last stages now. And Steve was telling me, Mike left Florida and came right to Texas, moved in, and he's been there. And so I called Mike, and he says, yes, I'm painting. He says, a whole new color is in my paintings now. But what a... And Steve said, you know, not a one of us but Mike could let go of what we were doing. He took his with him and went. Mm-hmm. But what a story that guy has to tell. Yeah. He used to be a contractor and totally dropped out of it. Said never again. That it was a powerful experience.
Yeah.
And we both got published as a result. That's good.
There's so many powerful stories, just listening to artists talk of their journey. It's,
that was a real
it's always amazing to me.
One after another coming on the road. I finally chose Cradled by Spirit. I was down at 3 and I had a horrible time. You Are Not Alone, Cradled by Spirit. What other one? One wasn't named yet and I had a horrible time down at 3. I wanted to
even
just
the titles are intriguing.
Just give me one.
Well, I want to do just one more thing. This is I just want to close with an artist prayer. This is what one that Julia composed, and I particularly like. So this being Holden, I thought this is a place where, even though we have not processed and become, you know, bonded as a group, I think we could safely do an artist prayer. So if you'll just spend a quiet time with me here. O great Creator, we are gathered together in your name that we may be of greater service to you and to our fellows. We offer ourselves to you as instruments. We open ourselves to your creativity in our lives. We surrender to you our old ideas. We welcome your new and more expansive ideas. We trust that you will lead us. We trust that it is safe to follow you. We know you created us and that creativity is your nature and our own. We ask you to unfold our lives according to your plan, not our low self-worth. Help us to believe that it is not too late and that we are not too small or too flawed to be healed by you and through each other and made whole. Help us to love one another, to nurture each other's unfolding, to encourage each other's growth and understand each other's fears. Help us to know that we are not alone, that we are loved and lovable. Help us to create as an act of worship to you.